action! Welcome to the third ever movie club with me and Pat. Pat, how are you?
Not too bad. Third installment already. You know, they say that in a trilogy, the third is the worst. So is this going to be the worst episode?
But they also say all good things come in threes. So you'd actually, after this, they could just be straight down. We also have We have our first ever movie club guest, Michael Campbell from Cancelled Movie Report.
It's an honor to be the first. I need to say that.
Yeah.
I feel very privileged to be in the movie club.
First and last.
You didn't tell me about the hazing rituals that go on before you join the movie club, but that's okay. I'm happy to do it for movies.
We've gone past all the hazing. Well, actually, Cambo, since we've got you, do you want to... Everyone knows because they've seen the title of the episode, but do you want to tell everyone what movie we're doing for Movie Club in March?
Well, jump in the time machine. So we're going back to 1999.
Yeah,
we're talking about The Mummy.
The Mummy from 1999. Let's get into it.
There is an ancient legend of a place known as the City of the Dead.
We call it the doorway to hell.
Where the earliest pharaohs were said to have hidden the wealth of Egypt. Are we going into battle?
There's something out there. Something underneath that sand.
They came to uncover its secrets.
Mummies, my good son. This is where they made the mummies.
They sought to unlock its treasure.
Then there was light.
Oh, boy.
What they did...
Oh, my God. It does exist.
I think this may be the Book of the Dead.
...was unleash a force unlike any the world has ever known.
That's right, it is The Mummy from 1999, directed by Stephen Sommers. The tagline of this film is "The legend you know, the adventure you have yet to imagine." It stars Brendan Fraser, Rachel Weisz, John Hannah, Arnold Vosloo, and a bunch of other people I've never heard of in my life. Well, we should start off, of course, just to give a bit more context on Cambo, because I know Cambo. Pat, you just met Cambo.
Just met him for the first time. I'm yet to get a bit of context.
And Cambo, you and Cambo are still in the process of like, are we going to be friends after this?
I mean, the real question is, we shook hands. Was it an acceptably firm handshake?
I mean, look, I've always been taught to give like a fairly firm handshake, so...
Sometimes that can be confronting.
Yeah, I've had a few people got to be like, whoa, way too firm, man. But like, so I'm always like really insecure with that. But like.
Yeah, we're taught to firm handshake and lower your voice about an octave. Yeah, g'day, mate.
Yeah. It's a lot of that.
Very true. I actually tried my best.
I actually raise my voice. I'm like, hey. But maybe that's just why, that's why no one really likes me. Cambo, we wanted to chat to you mainly because like you... You're actually known in the office. I work with Cambo at SCA. Mm. You're a podcast producer. You do your own podcast. You're known in the office as a movie buff, and we love this. You also do a podcast.
That's right. The rumors are true.
The rumors are true. And who doesn't these days?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, Julia Louis-Dreyfus has one now.
Like, really?
That's great for
her. She was the last one with that one.
Yeah, she was the last one. Why don't you explain to Pat what your podcast is? Because it's so great.
Sure. So I don't know if you're aware of the world of movies that didn't actually ever happen.
Lost media?
Lost media and scrapped ideas.
Absolutely love the topic of lost media.
A famous example of this is in the late 90s, Nicolas Cage was cast as Superman.
Yes.
All the photos come out of him in the costume and the interviews with him and behind the scenes snaps.
It was referenced in The Flash, the new Flash movie.
It was referenced in that horrendous montage of weird CGI faces in the end.
Which apparently they actually filmed him in the costume, so where's that footage?
And why did they not use Green Lantern? Because...
I mean, we know why.
Yeah.
So what our podcast does, it's called Cancelled Movie Report. We look into all of these projects. We look into who's going to be in it, who was involved in it, what happened to the project, documentary style.
Nice.
But what we do is we actually get the screenplays for all of these cancelled movies and we hire a bunch of voice actors.
Wow.
Often to voice match whoever the actor could be. For example, we've done one about Superman Lives with Nicolas Cage and we got a Nicolas Cage sound-alike in to voice Superman in all those scenes.
Look at Pat's face.
We actually recreate chunks of the movie to get you to understand what it would have been like. Wow.
So one of the ones, the first one I listened to was the original Toy Story 3. Yeah. So before the Toy Story 3 that we all know, there was another full script idea of what Toy Story 3 would actually be. And you like, basically you've casted voice actors who are sound alikes of the actual Toy Story cast.
Yeah.
And it like actually sounds like you're listening to an actual Toy Story movie. Yeah, it's really good quality.
Weird story, that one. They kind of wrote it as a threat, that whole movie.
Did they?
Yeah, well, because that's when Disney and Pixar weren't getting along. Oh. And Disney's like, legally we own this, so if you don't make it, we will. And we'll make this.
And it's shit.
That is so cool. I just want to preface this by saying Mike prepped me into this of like, oh, hey, we've got this guy on, but I don't want you to know what he does. Like, he wanted me to save it for a surprise because you particularly said, Mike, that it was something that I'd like. And my first thought was, oh, is someone making like a Club Penguin podcast or something?
Well, and now on to your other podcast, Pod Penguin.
But that's an incredible concept. I have so many questions, but we're not here to talk about that today, though I'd love to post-record. But I believe we're here to talk about a certain movie with a certain former heartthrob who may have won an Oscar in the previous year.
Take umbrage with former.
What a segue from Pat, though. Like, when Pat is so good on air, by the way, but when he feels lost, he just pads with lots of words, which is why it's like a former Hollywood heartthrob, former won an Oscar. Like, okay, so why did you choose The Mummy for this week, month?
This week, month, I thought the Mummy is a movie that I rewatched this before we recorded here, but I want you to know I didn't need to.
Okay.
Because I know this movie like the back of my hand.
Well,
and you do
have nice hands.
Thank you very much. And I know them intricately.
Yeah.
And it's something that I'm so curious about because I grew up with The Mummy. I was 9 years old when it came out. That's the exact right age to get into a big adventure film like this.
Prime age.
But I'm so curious as to how it's actually aged through the eyes of people that have never seen it, which I believe was you. Pat, I'm not sure whether you had seen it previously.
No, I have not seen it.
It came out before Pat was
before. I have seen it since.
On planet Earth.
That ages me like The Mummy imitate.
Yeah, you are The Mummy. Yeah.
So because everyone of my rough age and generation, they're obsessed with this movie.
Yeah. Mm.
And I kind of wanted to sense check it.
And I did say to you, Cambo, like, I have so much to say about The Mummy, but I've never actually seen it. Now, that was a little bit of a tall tale. What I should have said is I have so much to say about The Mummy, but I've never seen it in its entirety, right?
Oh,
and I'll go first if that's cool, Pat. So my experience with this movie is like I was a very scared kid.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff scared me. Like you would watch an episode of fucking The Rugrats that was just a little bit weird at the end.
Too much reptile.
Yeah, and I'm having nightmares. Like The Simpsons Treehouse of Horrors gave me nightmares because I didn't understand like the parody nature of them. So it was like watching the actual horror movies. The episode where Mr. Burns is like glowing and they think he's an alien terrified me, right? Mm. My brother and my two cousins who are older than me loved watching action movies and stuff. And I was quite a bit younger and they always made me watch them and I would be terrified. And The Mummy was one of those movies. There are so many things in this movie that scared the shit out of me as a kid. I had to block my eyes.
Wow.
Particularly like The Mummy when it's like his face is like half kind of mummified.
He's still regenerating.
Terrified me. And then the other thing that I distinctly remember is like the locusts. You know the locusts that come out?
Mm.
That scared me. I think when they eat a person. They like fly past a guy and then he's gone or is he skeleton or something like that. Scared the shit out of me one night. And then we go home because we used to watch it all the time and I couldn't even finish it. It would scare me. Went home.
When you said you'd never seen The Mummy, you're talking about actually seen it.
Yeah, yeah.
You heard The Mummy.
Yeah.
Your eyes were just covered the whole time.
Yeah, just another example of how scared I was as a kid. Princess Fiona in ogre form scared the shit out of me. I couldn't watch it. The idea that this beautiful princess could become this disgusting ogre scared me, right? Now, that night I came home after I saw the locust scene. And then it must have been a windy night. So there was like wind hitting stuff against my window and I thought it was the locust. So I actually went to my dad and I was like, I can't sleep. the locusts are outside from the mummy. And then my dad was like, oh, okay, I'll go have a look. And I looked out the window, and credit to my dad, he like went outside my window and was like looking around, like pretending to see if there was any like bad guys or locusts or anything. And then he came back and he's like, I didn't see anything. I think it's okay. So, classic. So this movie was traumatizing to me.
I love this idea that you knocked gingerly on your dad's bedroom door. Dad, I think the plagues of Egypt are here. Yeah. Okay, I'll check.
What did you think, Pat?
Yeah, so prior to watching it in anticipation for this podcast, I'd never seen it. I'd been aware of it. I think the third one came out around 2008, and I do remember seeing promo material for it at the time. But
is that... That's the Scorpion King? The
Dragon
King?
Empire.
Oh.
Yes.
Wait, so there's The Mummy Returns, yes. And then was there another one?
Yeah, third but one.
There was also The Scorpion King. Wasn't yes, that like that a was spin-off? A spin-off,
yes.
Yeah.
And then there was the 2017 Tom Cruise Mummy, which is another story.
And side note, there's like five sequels to The Scorpion King, none of which star The Rock.
Oh, okay.
They get progressively cheaper.
Yeah,
with
right.
every sequel yeah. that they release.
Yeah, maybe we should have just watched like the Scorpion King like quadrilogy or something. Yeah.
the next 5 months of movie class. True. Scorpion King.
But yeah, my only other solid memory of The Mummy as a franchise was at Dreamworld. There used to be like a brief attraction, but I never went on it. I wasn't sure if it was like a roller coaster or one of those like 4D like things, but yeah, that's my only awareness, just that one Dreamworld thing.
And so what did you think on watching it?
Yeah, well, watching it, the biggest thought I had around it was like, oh, this is like the same like story format as like a Jerry Bruckheimer film. Like this just had like all the ingredients of what you'd see in like a Pirates of the Caribbean.
Okay, that's interesting, because I thought more Indiana Jones, and I feel like Brendan Fraser was really channeling Harrison Ford. Do you feel that?
I think Rick O'Connell, the character of Rick O'Connell, is the coolest motherfucker in the world, because he's the only guy since Indiana Jones that has ever pulled that charming that character rogue off. Thing
yeah.
off.
Yeah.
Because so many people try it and it doesn't work.
What's an example, do you reckon?
I mean, the most direct example is the other Han Solo from the movie
Alden,
Solo.
Iron Reich. Yeah, I think that guy.
Alden Iron Reich. I think that Chris Pratt has tried it a few times.
Yeah.
But this idea where this guy is kind of he's Swami, you can't trust him, but he's charming and you like him. Mm. He's an adventurer, he's a scoundrel. It's easy to write on paper and hard to pull off and make it likable and not feel like you're trying really hard.
Yeah.
And I think generally for people of my generation, Indiana Jones came out kind of before I was born.
Mm.
So this is the first one I saw where I'm like, I like this guy. He's the rogue adventurer type.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that for a while Brendan Fraser was going to be the next Harrison Ford?
Yeah, there's a kind of a sad story as to why Brendan Fraser disappeared.
Yes.
But absolutely, he was kind of primed to be, maybe not Harrison Ford, because Harrison Ford fancied himself as a really dramatic actor as well. He was always doing Patriot Games and Regarding Henry and all these kind of kitchen sink dramas as well.
Yeah.
But Brendan Fraser had the charm and essentially he had the it, right?
Yeah.
The movie star it.
But and I think then, he could also play a little bit goofy, which I liked. Like,
yeah,
I mean, George of the Jungle.
Yeah.
Looney Tunes back in action, I think, like, yes. he was quite good in as well. I mean, as a film buff, you probably think that's a shit movie. To me, that's a fantastic movie. And I think Pat agrees.
I'm a little bit in the middle. I love the idea of it.
Nice name drop of another podcast you work on. Oh.
Nice one. Yeah, look, maybe 1 month we'll have to do Back in Action. I've definitely got a bit to talk about on that. Some great stuff I love about it, but...
Pat's lost. Pat, quick, Pat. When it comes to this movie, there's one thing I'd love to get both of your thoughts on. And Pat, we actually discussed this a little bit when we did Now You See Me as the first movie club, which is this really sad thing that every movie seemingly pre maybe 2016 has an insane disrespect of women.
Yeah.
Like, to the point where like the first time Brendan Fraser meets the primary female character, he just grabs her and kisses her Han Solo
her
style.
Name, her name is Evie. I'm going to have to correct yeah. her.
But it's like, it is, I do find it so interesting to like see that, like, I don't think you would do that in a movie now, even if you had a character like that.
It's interesting that you bring that up. I don't know whether you guys are aware of what's called the Bechdel test.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's sadly failed by so many movies, this one included.
This movie astronomically fails it. I don't think there's even another
one. It only fails by one. There's the three rules of the Bechdel test.
Okay.
For people that aren't aware, it is there more than one female character? Yes, there is. Do they talk to each other? Yes, they do. Do they talk to each other about anything that's not a man? No, they don't.
Mm.
So it's closer to to passing it than not, but that's pretty bare minimum representation we're talking about.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And the thing is, like, you know, after he kisses her, like, later in the movie, she's like, why did you kiss me? Like, this, it's like this mystery to her. Like, why would she's this also, man have like, kissed me?
She's also, like, obsessed with it.
Yes.
When later when she's on a boat and she's just kind of daydreaming and she goes to hang up her dress and she misses the thing because she's thinking about the kiss so much.
It's all it's that like, occupies her mind. Yeah. And I'm like, fucking hell. It's so bad. But I guess that's just like of its time.
Yeah. Even at the start when she's a bit klutzy and then the whole thing in the library where there's that domino effect and she just goes, oops.
Yeah.
By the way, amazingly good practical stunt. That was done for real.
Oh.
They in one single take, they actually one knocked take. Down every single one of those bookshelves for real.
Oh, wow.
Great yeah, to that.
I just want to give credit. That's a cool that's stunt good. That goes, I think, underrated in this movie.
Oh, from a stunt perspective, 100%. From a story perspective, I just thought, this is going to be her whole character.
Like, yeah.
The klutzy librarian.
Yeah.
Do you think, like, visually, there's a lot of visual effects in this movie, a lot involving the mummy who, like, you know, is a resurrected mummy who's regenerating himself. What do you think of some of the visual effects?
Looking at it through two lenses, 1999 lens, cutting edge.
Mm.
And the one thing that they do in this movie, which I think helps it age better, is they do a lot of miniature work as well.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of the old ancient cities and stuff are actually miniatures and then they'll kind of CGI in a background. And I think that helps it still look better than it would completely done in CGI. There are a few wonky establishing shots here and there in this movie. And there are a couple of composites with clearly mummies that aren't there that are a bit wonky. But surprisingly, rewatching it last night, it held up better than I remembered it, with it being a bit hokey. I think the fact that it's hokey lends it some credibility to be a bit shit.
Yeah, for sure. What do you reckon, Pat? As someone, you know, this is pre your existence.
By what, 1 year?
By one whole year. Like, what are your thoughts on the like VFX?
Yeah, I definitely did notice the quality was, you know, very 1999, as you said. I do have to admit, the copy that I saw only capped at about 480p, which is about the equivalent of like a DVD copy. So I'd like to think that I got the proper at home 2000s experience.
Actually, that's the other thing. I don't know if, were you watching it on MyPlex?
No, I watched it through another legal source, wink, wink.
Okay, on the version I have on MyPlex, and I'm gonna say, this is what Movie Club's all about, okay? I'm pretty sure, in fact, I'm 99% sure there are a lot of points, particularly at the start, where there's supposed to be subtitles.
Oh, me too.
Is there supposed to be subtitles? Because they're definitely speaking a different language.
Yeah, look, a lot of this movie takes place in the Middle East and has characters not speaking English.
And there is supposed to be subtitles. Because sometimes you don't know.
Specifically at the very beginning, we're in ancient Egypt where they're speaking
English
such.
Doesn't exist yet at this point.
So you were hearing kind of, you were hearing words you didn't understand and then the occasional like Imhotep or Anuxetamun.
Yes.
You go, okay, I guess that's that person.
Yeah, I have no idea what they were saying.
100% subtitles. Yeah.
So
I would say that sets up the main crux of the plot.
Yeah, and that's maybe why I lost a bit of interest. But as I said, that's what Movie Club's all about. It's just about watching movies. It doesn't say how.
Yeah, I feel like the lack of subtitles currently, like, it's like we only watched like half the movie or something.
Yeah, seriously. And you know what? Also, at the start, I was like, this dodgy fucking pirated version doesn't have subtitles. Should I stop and get another one? And I said, no, That's what Movie Club's all about, which is the new saying, the new catchphrase of Movie Club.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Put it on a t-shirt.
I'm interested to know your guys' thoughts. This movie has a reputation online as being a lot of people's bisexual awakening.
Really?
Because everybody in this movie can get it. Like, it's the sexiest movie. Brendan's never looked better. Rachel Weisz looks amazing. Arnold Vosloo is the mummy. What a, like a golden god.
Well, we
even there's you know, the protector of the ancient city. There's a tribe that kind of protects it, and he is the most handsome man in the world. He's like the Aragorn of this movie.
Oh wow. Mm. Well, interestingly, on that note, it's funny you bring that up because we do a show called Pat and Mike as well, which is a companion show to 20th Century Boy. We've talked recently how it's sort of like the MCU, you know, 20th Century Boy is Iron Man, Pat and Mike. Pat says it's She-Hulk. I think it's different. Movie Club maybe is, I don't know, Guardians of the Galaxy, something like that. And we were talking on Pat and Mike about how I had a crush on Tweety Bird when the Looney Tune. And Pat told me on last week's episode, Tweety Bird is in fact a male. So so Tweety Bird was my bisexual awakening.
Right.
Pat, Pat, your response.
Look, I can't say that that's the first thing that was coming to mind when I was watching this movie. But
you didn't think the cast was hot?
Oh, look, I think everyone was very
it's one of the
well presenting.
Going around.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've seen some other good movies.
But no, like in hindsight, I can definitely understand that. Like, I mean, I think even though, as we were saying, like it's not, you know, it doesn't pass the Bechdel test, mm-hmm. or, you know, the more klutzy type from, what was the, her character's name again?
Evie.
But I think everyone, like, you know, I guess in the most nicest way, I don't know, hot wise, I think everyone was pretty even, you know, it wasn't just like,
I think there's
just
two,
being so diplomatic. I think diplomatic. There's two that stand out, in my opinion. Rick O'Connell and Evie, just a couple you just want to see make out in the film.
I got to say, like, I never knew about, like, all the stuff that went down with Brendan Fraser, which, like, we don't have to talk about. Like, you can look up into that yourself. But I remember him being so big and then just disappearing. And I was like, whatever happened to that guy? Similar to Jessica Alba.
Mm.
Like, she was very big in like Fantastic Four and stuff and then sort of just disappeared.
Yeah.
But what did you guys think of like Brendan Fraser coming back into the mainstream, like with The Whale and like winning the Oscar?
Loved it. Like obviously here and there, like over the years, I picked up on like some of the, you know, the reasons why he kind of took a break. But I think amongst all that, you know, it was really unfortunate, but just for him to be able to, like, you know, rise again and go on to win an Oscar. Like, it's an incredible comeback story. And, like, I'm even more excited to see, like, what's next for him.
I mean, I feel like he's one of those guys that was – he was, just on the precipice of becoming absolutely huge. And then when everything kind of went away, I feel like people didn't notice he was gone.
Mm.
And they didn't miss him until he was back. And they were like, oh my God, could we have been having this?
Yeah.
20 years in between.
Yeah.
I think it's incredible. I think that his performance in The Whale was really, really good. But even before then, he'd done a few roles kind of before The Whale where he worked kind of consistently, but there was this really sad kind of almost dead behind the eyes thing going on with him.
Yeah.
And then a couple of years ago, he was back.
Mm.
Just we like I'm not sure exactly what happened to change his psyche, and I still remember there's a TV show called Doom Patrol that he's in.
I was about to bring that up, the DC show.
The DC show. That's the first time I ever, when I was watching that, I was like, oh my God, that is Brendan Fraser.
Yeah,
where's he been?
It's like when Frankie Muniz pops up on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. And you're like, oh my God, he's back.
Yeah. Can I say this movie does one of my favorite things?
Yeah,
which is a production company logo into the scene transition where it has the big universal globe that turns into the sun, the hot Egyptian sun.
Yeah.
And I love whenever a movie does it. It's one of my, it's such a specific trope.
Mm.
And I love a good production company logo morphing into the movie. Famously done in Indiana Jones. And I think this is maybe that the Paramount Mountain becomes a mountain in South America, kind of match cut.
Funnily enough, I was going to say the only other one I can think of is the South Park movie, the Paramount Mountain just becomes a mountain in South Park and it zooms out into the city.
Yes.
Go on.
No, well, that's Indiana Jones thing.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I love, this is my favorite moment of the whole movie, where there's a character in this movie called Benny. And Benny's a real scumbag. He's one of my favorite movie scumbags.
Okay. Name the other top two.
Top two movie scumbags.
Dave, Johnny Depp, what's his name? Jack Sparrow? He'd have to be one.
Yeah, there's a movie called True Lies, and James Woods in True Lies, a good scumbag.
What about Paul Giamatti in Big Fat Liar?
He's a good scumbag.
He's a scumbag, but you gotta love him.
There's a moment in this movie, and Benny and Rick have a tumultuous relationship. They're always kind of at each
other. Bloody say the least.
And there's a bit where he needs to go and question Benny, and he walks into a room and he goes, "Hey, Benny." And Benny starts to run away, and he just fucking picks up a chair and pegs it at him.
Yes, that's like, right.
That's the best thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I don't know why that moment makes me laugh so much. I think it's just the idea that this man just throws a chair at another man out of the blue.
Yeah.
But that's actually my favorite moment of the whole movie.
I love that. Do you think both of you, as film buffs, do you think this is a good movie? Like, or is it rose-colored glasses?
Look, I will say this about the movie. If you go to Rotten Tomatoes...
I will say this about the movie. No.
If you go to Rotten Tomatoes, this movie is rotten.
Yes.
It has a rotten
score.
Yeah.
And it wasn't well reviewed. But what I think is underrated about this movie, and most adventure movies that work more than they don't, is screenplay structure. This is a really well-structured movie because adventure movies all kind of lend themselves to the same pattern. There's a really popular book from probably about 15 years ago called Save the Cat, which is all about structuring a screenplay to make it sell in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And it became really popular with screenwriters there. This is that book to a T.
Okay.
So there are certain things that have to hit. There's something called a Save the Cat moment, which means the character does something really good at the beginning that makes sure that the audience likes them for the rest of the movie. And Brendan Fraser has about four Save the Cat moments in the opening scene.
Yes.
Nice.
So it hits all of those beats to the point where it's so well structured. And I actually paused to check last night. At the midpoint of a movie, everything needs to dramatically change and turn. And at the exact midpoint of this movie, almost to the second, the mummy wakes up.
Oh. Ooh.
Like, it is such a well-structured screenplay and structured movie.
Yeah.
That I think that's what makes it feel kind of energetic. So do I think it's a good movie? It's not the best movie in the world, but it's a really entertaining movie because it's structured so well.
Yeah. What do you reckon, Pat?
Yeah, my opinion's pretty similar to yours. I think, obviously, I don't have the same kind of view of it as someone who, you know, didn't really grow up. You know, well, I wasn't even alive when it came out, you know. As we said. Yes. And I think for me, in terms of like whether it's like, you know, good or rotten, rose tinted or like a good movie, I think it's a bit of both. I think on the one hand, you know, obviously it's not the most, you know, it's
sophisticated.
Not, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's nothing that's going to get nominated for, you know, an Academy Award or a serious, you know, nomination. But there's great qualities in it. You know, like you said, I didn't even think of, I'm not familiar with the Save the Cat or the structure. What was it called? Sorry.
The structure that in the book is called the Save the Cat structure.
Right.
But it basically breaks down to like 8 points throughout a movie that are bound to happen. And once you read the book, it kind of ruins movies for you a little bit.
I want to read it now.
Because you start going, there's that moment. But yeah, the midpoint was the thing I brought up before, which is at the middle of a movie, things will always switch in some way. Either it looks like the heroes have won and they haven't really, or it looks like the heroes have been defeated and they haven't really. And the midpoint of this movie is the mummy waking up.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's structurally, that's pretty much perfect
for
an adventure movie.
Do you think, like, I genuinely do think that this movie is actually scary. Like, to me, this movie, at least for kids, like, borders on like a light horror film. I think the imagery is pretty scary.
I agree with you. When I first saw this movie, it scared the pants off me. I was so scared of it. But it's funny that you mentioned that. So this movie in itself was a remake. I know there is a remake in 2017.
Yes.
But this was from like the 1930s, The Mummy.
It was one of the like the Universal Monsters series,
exactly.
Which like was Dracula, Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein, The Mummy, Invisible Man, like all that kind of
Black Lagoon, stuff like that. And when Stephen Sommers took it over, He said he doesn't actually want to make a horror movie. He wants to make a swashbuckling adventure film like it's from the 1940s. And then just as the kind of MacGuffin of the film, the thing that everyone's going after, that's just where the little horror elements creep in.
Yeah.
And I think it is more an adventure film than a horror film. But I think at least when it does horror, it actually does horror.
Yes. Yeah.
Even I was picking up on that. Like, obviously, you know, Universal with their, you know, legacy characters and the monsters. Like, even I was thinking, man, this is just like, it's got like the whole like Universal thing with just like written all over it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And of the horror elements, you said that you were scared of the locust as a kid.
Yeah.
The thing that occupied my mind that I was terrified actually existed were the scarab beetles that get under your skin.
Yes, yes. Those as well. Those 100% as well creeped me out.
And
yes.
there is a ride at Universal Studios. This may have been what was in the Gold Coast as well. It's called The Revenge of the Mummy. Mm. And the ride itself was also directed by Stephen Sommers. But there is a moment in the ride in which you meet the mummy at the roller coaster goes forwards until the point in which you meet the mummy, a big animatronic mummy.
Wow.
And then it has these air guns inside your little capsule to make it feel like those things are crawling all over you. And then it shoots you through the same roller coaster backwards.
Yeah.
That's insane.
The first time that I went on that ride, having this like thing always lodged in the back of my mind, like a scarab beetle, that these things could be real and whatever happened. The moment that first happened on that ride, I genuinely freaked out.
And like, not to get onto a completely different podcast, which is Ride Club, but that's good ride design. Like,
yeah.
There are so many elements that can really elevate, like the theming of a roller coaster can really elevate the experience, and that's good ride design. But that's for Ride Club. We should very briefly, if it's okay, talk about the Dark Monsters universe. How much do you know of this? Because Campbell and I have talked about it a lot.
Are we referring to the 2017 Dark Universe?
Oh, sorry. Was it just Dark
Universe? Dark Universe.
So, what do you know about it?
Yeah, so I was in high school when that was first happening. And
yeah, me too.
Was I?
Yeah.
We're all the same age here. But yeah, and I remember like just everyone shitting on like the 2017
Mummy.
I mean, yeah, also, was that meant to be a remake of the Brendan Fraser?
I don't think it's funny.
They said no. They said it's not. And Tom Cruise's character is called Rick Morton. Instead of Rick O'Connell.
Oh, really?
Nick Morton, not Rick Morton. But weirdly in that movie, the Book of the Dead, the MacGuffin of this movie that everyone's after, is in the halfway through that movie, they go to like a warehouse that Russell Crowe runs.
Right.
As Jekyll and Hyde. And that book is in there. So you're like, wait, so is it connected?
So the book from the mummy that we've watched.
Exactly. Oh. Is in the movie.
As like a nod, but then you're like, but what?
But canonically, like, is that?
Yeah.
Because it's
a
different mummy.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, the Dark Universe is a fascinating thing. So you were in high school when it came out.
Mm.
Were you aware of what they were promising?
Yes, I remember, obviously, they were going for like an MCU type thing. I remember the photo shoot with, there was Johnny Depp as the Invisible Man, Tom Cruise as Nick Rick, whatever he was called.
Russell Crowe was Dr. Jekyll and Dr. Hyde.
There was, I think, Javier Bourne.
Yeah, Javier Bardem was Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
Who was Bride of Frankenstein? Was
Angelina Jolie.
Okay.
Yeah, like they.
David Spade was not involved in this, was he? No. So what? I'm thinking David Spade was the Invisible Man in Hotel Transylvania, which also uses these characters.
You're thinking of a different cinematic universe there.
Yeah. I'm thinking of the HTU Hotel
Transylvania. This is the cinematic universe we deserve.
When you're describing, like, oh yeah, Johnny Depp, fucking Javier, Angelina, and I'm like, I swear David Spade was in that photo.
But yeah, that's cool.
The photo of all of these people who were in this like 10-year plan universe.
Mm.
Didn't you tell me none of them were ever in the same room?
They weren't.
It was all photoshopped.
That movie is a composite because they couldn't schedule them all together at the same time, which is such a good omen of where that was going.
Yeah,
like, even at the time, they couldn't get six people in a room to start a universe.
But that's the thing. I always say like when Iron Man came out, it wasn't like... And we've already casted Captain America, maybe they had. They didn't announce it. Mm. And I think it was just like, we're just putting Iron Man out. we're just going to see what happens. Don't you reckon it would be cool if we did this, Avengers, but they weren't announcing to the world, yeah, this is our 10-year plan. Now yeah. they do that. But
yeah, it's putting the cart before the horse.
Yes.
It's and they really overestimated people's interest
giving
in
a shit
in the Universal Classic Monsters.
Yeah.
Which is funny because the next year, or no, 2 years later, there was a movie came out from Universal, from Lee Whannell, Australia's own Lee Whannell, director of Upgrade, writer of Saw, which was an update of The Invisible Man, which was a low-budget thriller movie.
Without David Spade.
Without David Spade.
David Spade has never live-action done Invisible Man. But even if he did, we actually wouldn't know because he would be invisible. Continue, please, Campo.
But when that came out as the low-budget horror idea of like, and it had themes of like domestic violence. Yes. Imagine if your partner that was, you know, abusing you, now could he's invisible.
Yeah.
Mm. That's a really terrifying thought.
Yeah.
And immediately, I think collectively everyone, yeah, that's what they should be doing.
Mm,
they should make them low-budget horror movies and not these big-budget action movies. And I think the reason to blame is The Mummy because it shouldn't work.
Mm.
This idea shouldn't work, and it just happens to be so fun that it did accidentally spawn this idea that all Universal monsters should be big adventure films.
Yes. Did you ever see, just before we wrap, did you ever see Victor Frankenstein with Daniel Radcliffe?
No, I didn't.
Have you seen it?
No, never got to see that one.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, him and James McAvoy.
Yeah.
I know a lot of... This is one of those weird movies. There's movies that I know a lot about even though I've never seen them.
Yeah, okay.
And that is one that it was a spec script that went around for a little while written by a real piece of shit.
Oh. called
Max Landis.
Okay.
But yeah, that was that. I feel like that thought it was cleverer than it was.
Yes, you know, it wasn't that clever.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, this has been an awesome chat about The Mummy. I want to just finish up. This is completely unrelated, but the other day in the office, you started telling me a story of about you and Neil Patrick Harris. And I said, oh, tell this on the podcast. So yeah. Could you please tell everyone that story?
Yeah, this started by, I said to Mike, did I ever tell you about the time I ruined Neil Patrick Harris's night?
Oh. Bam, there's our headline.
Get the TikTok now.
So this was in New Mexico, which is where Neil Patrick Harris is from.
Right.
And I don't think he lives there anymore, but he's from there. And we were in like a bar in New Mexico, and I happened to be with this guy called Chris. And he was wearing a t-shirt that said, Legend, Wait For It, Dairy. And at one point he looked at me and goes, hey, random question, but is that Neil Patrick Harris? I was like, no. And I looked over, I was like, oh, actually, yes. Yes, it is Neil Patrick Harris. He's just sitting with his friends.
And of course, classic quote of Barney Stinson.
Exactly.
Just in case people don't know.
So he said to me, he said, like, he's clearly with his friends. He, no one's noticed me. He just had a baseball cap on. do you think it'd be okay if I get a photo? And I said, look, generally I'd say no, but coincidentally you're wearing the t-shirt. I think if you went up subtly, he'd probably go, oh, okay, that's okay.
Yeah.
So we went over to Neil Patrick Harris because he's like, come with me. I don't want to go alone. So we went over to Neil Patrick Harris. He said, oh, hey, sorry, man. I know that you're with your friends. Bit of a coincidence. He's wearing this t-shirt. Would you mind if we got a picture? And he's like, yeah, that's fine.
Oh.
So we stand up, take the picture. And we asked this girl that we were thinking, do you mind taking the picture? And what she didn't do is turn the flash off. So takes a picture in this small bar and the flash goes off. And about 100 people turn around to see what the hell just happened.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no.
And his face just dropped because clearly he's like, oh, shit.
Now everyone's going to want a photo.
By the time we left about 10 minutes later, there was a line.
Oh, no.
It was like a Comic-Con appearance or something. There was a line of people waiting to get their photo with Neil Patrick Harris.
So did you ruin his night or did the flash ruin his night?
Technically, the flash. If we had have just left him alone.
Yeah.
And not got this picture.
Yeah, but you could say that with anything.
The picture that we have with him as well is just red because the flash is in the middle of going off as well. It's a terrible picture. But by the time we walked out, there was a line of people to meet him. And then we were outside this place for about 5 minutes in which he walked out with his friends with a mob of people behind him. Being like, all right, cool, thank you. And people were just... I've never really seen this happen before, but especially drunk people, they're just shouting stuff at him.
Yeah.
And just like lines of dialogue that he delivered once.
Yeah, yeah,
where
yeah.
people would be like, hey, Barney Stinson, legend, wait for it, Derek.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, cool, I'd you. Do that. Yeah, I yeah. would do that. Yeah. If I saw him, I would definitely just shout meaningless stuff. He'd be like, yeah, that, I said that once. Yeah.
But it was one of those, because we were still outside when he exited. And I don't know if this happened, but in my memory, it's like as he was walking past and locked eyes with us, and we're just like, oh, I'm so sorry. Sorry about that. And he's like, yeah, okay.
Hey, thank you so much, man, for coming on. This has been awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Paddy, thanks again. Hey, another good movie club.
Good one. And yeah, next month's movie, I'm more than proud to announce, we are watching the critically acclaimed art film, Freddy Got Fingered.
Have you seen it, Cambo?
Oh, yeah.
Give your 2-second review. 1, 2. Oh, cool. All right. All right. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you, Cambo. Well, plug. So, Cancelled Movie Report is your pod.
That's right.
And there's an Instagram page.
Yeah, at Cancelled Movies on all of the different social platforms.
Yeah, great.
Even when we're not putting out episodes, we put out cool, like, behind-the-scenes snippets and such.
Yeah, love awesome. That. It's a great pod. And hopefully we'll get you back on Movie Club like later in the year.
I know. Don't stop me.
Oh shit. Next month, I'm not even here. Thank you so much, guys. And
cut. That was a good cut.
That was a good cut.